Good afternoon, everyone. 1210, you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN on this Memorial Day. Thanks very much for taking me along to the picnic or along for the drive or maybe even alongside the beach. The winds are from the southwest, so the beaches are acceptable on this Monday, Memorial Day of 2017. We're going to have a regular show. Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno will be in just a second or so. In the second half hour, Mike Allen and Jim Vandehei, I don't know if you are interested in politics at all the way I am, but these are a couple of the guys who came up with Politico, which is a huge force now in journalism, political journalism in this country, online, an online presence. They have gone on to create Axios.com. They like to pronounce it Axios, but it's A-X-I-O-S. And they're kind of hoping to now find another money-making venture when it comes to online journalism. They focus on politics, but also on science and technology. So Jim Vandehei and Mike Allen a little bit later on the Wintrust Business Lunch as well. We'll start with Chicago Inno. That's what we do on most Mondays. And Jim Dahlke is on a phone line with us today. Jim, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hey, Steve, thanks so much for having me, as always. Great to join you.
Paint the picture for me. Are you around a grill? Are you maybe, do you have your feet in a pool? Or what exactly are you doing this Memorial Day?
The grill is in my future. Later today, going to get up with the wife's family and do a little grilling right now, just sitting up here in my home office here in lovely Geneva, Illinois.
Well, good for you. Geneva's lovely every month of the year, but especially in May, Jim.
Yes, sir.
So Chicago Inno is really, you guys should check this out. It's a great sort of place to keep up with the innovative technology, the innovative industries in Chicago. And Jim and Will Flanagan are on with me on most Mondays afternoon. You know, we should talk, since it's Memorial Day, a little bit about the bunker. I had a couple of the guys on behind the bunker last year, but that is something that is sort of geared toward vets hoping to start their own businesses, right? Tell me about the bunker.
Exactly. Yeah, the bunker is one of really the most interesting sort of tech initiatives, in my opinion, that has come out of Chicago. It's a Chicago-based organization that has spread sort of all over the country. They're in 15 cities now across the U.S. And in America's history, entrepreneurship has been an avenue for a career path for veterans throughout our history. But that number has really gone down a lot. Veterans of recent wars getting into the entrepreneurship, I think, bunker sites is something in like the single digit percentage. So not a lot of veterans are going into startups as a career path, and the bunker really wants to change that. So they're really making entrepreneurship accessible and a logical career path for a lot of these people who are coming back from overseas. And basically what they do is connect entrepreneurs with all the resources they need to kind of get up off the ground, whether that is connecting them with a co-founder, connecting them with technical talent, connecting them with resources to venture capital. This is an online community designed specifically for veterans to start startups. So it's an organization that I think Chicago is really proud to kind of have founded, and it's an organization that is making some really big differences across the U.S.
All right, so there's that. That's a startup or an area that started in Chicago and has moved beyond. Let's start talking about another group, Unshackled. They started in Silicon Valley and were in Chicago, right? I think just this last week, right? You wrote about them.
Yeah, Unshackled Ventures is a VC fund based in Silicon Valley. And you're seeing a trend sort of kind of emerge with a lot of these venture capital firms. They really want to have something else to add to the entrepreneurs outside of capital. So they really want to be able to kind of bring an additional set of resources beyond just say, here's some money, go ahead and scale your business. So what this VC firm does, Unshackled Ventures, is they only invest in immigrant entrepreneurs. So the companies that they put money into have to have at least one immigrant founder. And the value that Unshackled brings is they help the company through everything in the immigration process. So they do all the visa details, everything they need to kind of not have to worry about that sort of administrative stuff.
I know that if you look at the unicorns created in the U.S., right, a majority, a slim majority, but a majority of them are created by immigrants in this country.
Yes, over half, 51% of unicorns, so that's a startup, a private startup valued at $1 billion or more, has at least one immigrant, one foreign-born founder. So immigrants are really sort of the backbone of a lot of the most successful tech companies in the U.S. today. And this VC fund really wants to, you know, be some of the early money and that behind some of these companies, but also more than money, they really want to help take care of all the visa processes. They'll even hire entrepreneurs into Unshackled Ventures as an employee if their startup that they're trying to get off the ground is not quite mature enough yet. So they will really sort of go out of their way to help facilitate the visa process, get them to stay in the U.S., build their company in the U.S. rather than have to go back home and build it overseas.
I think it's interesting. So we just talked about the bunker, and the bunker obviously helping vets, but here is this Unshackled focusing on immigrants. And you just mentioned something, but I wanted you to talk a little bit more about it. So if you're an immigrant, you're in this country, you're working on something, you've got a visa, the visa expires. I think what you're saying is if you're working with Unshackled and you're facing maybe that it's time to come back to your country, they will actually hire you, put you on their payroll so that you can extend your visa and stay and continue to work here. Am I reading that correctly?
That's right. So, yeah, they will even go as far as to bring you onto their payroll. And so what that allows you to do is to kind of continue to focus on building your business. So obviously it's incredibly tricky to get startups off the ground, and something 90% of startups fail. So when you're trying to build a business from the ground up, but you're also dealing with all the incredible difficult loopholes that you need to get through to jump through to handle the immigration process, it can be very difficult to actually focus on working on your company. And that's exactly what Unshackled allows you to do. So they'll take you onto their payroll. They will kind of facilitate the visa process for you, allow you to get your head down, work on your business, hire your team, and kind of go from there. So yeah, they are really kind of making the extra effort to say, hey, we want you to build your business in the U.S. They have a mission of creating 100,000 American jobs by keeping immigrant entrepreneurs in the U.S.
Well, so you're right. So it sounds like at first read, like they are doing that for the immigrants, but you could read it in a mirror and say that they are doing it for the U.S. because those immigrants with the ideas are faced with a dilemma. Do I risk trying to create something here and running out of time, or do I go back to my home country and create a business there?
And we have talked to lots of entrepreneurs in Chicago who have faced that exact dilemma, really kind of down to the wire sort of stories where entrepreneurs were, you know, basically ready to book that ticket to go back home and were able to stay because their visa came in at the last second. So this is really a very difficult thing to navigate for a lot of entrepreneurs. And this is just kind of taking a little bit of that burden off of them.
We like to give away things here. We'd like to have contests, radio contests, nothing new. This is a limited time offer from Saucy. You wrote about this liquor delivery company, Saucy, and I guess the deadline's today. But if you sign up for a party, they're going to send over a free bartender. What's Saucy about?
Oh, yeah. So this is basically Memorial Day party on demand. So Saucy is an alcohol delivery startup and really has been focusing on, you know, getting you beer, wine, spirits delivered to your house in under half an hour. Chicago is one of the cities that they're in. They're kind of doing a fun Memorial Day promo where they're also going to send you a bartender on demand. So if you spend over $300 with Saucy on your booze for your Memorial Day weekend, order in by today, they will send you a free bartender for 3 hours. It's kind of part of a package that they're actually rolling out across all their markets permanently where you'll be able to book a bartender for different events. I mean, think about it. You know, you're putting a big event together. You got a big graduation party. You got a big summer party. And, you know, kind of having somebody there to take care of the mixing and the pouring drinks isn't a terrible idea. So, yeah, bartenders on demand this weekend in Chicago.
And what is Saucy in general? I mean, the idea is if you're going to have a party, an event, rather than going out to a liquor store, picking up the booze on your own, they just come with a package. I mean, you don't have to have the bartender, right? They just sell you the liquor.
Totally. And so, yeah, I mean, they sort of launched without even really parties in mind. This is sort of like, you know, if you want a six pack rather than walking out to the store, or you want a bottle of wine rather than going out. So I mean, they are among the group of apps like Foxtrot, like Drizzly, some of these companies that are really focusing on bringing you alcohol on demand. So they are, you know, sort of advertise a 30-minute window where you can get alcohol delivered. Chicago is one of the markets they're based over in the West Coast. So Chicago was their first market to launch outside of California.
It's amazing how we have changed the way we are about alcohol and its delivery, which I think is good. Rather than being so uptight, things have really loosened up. So that's another example of that. All right, Jim Dahlke, hang on the phone, will you? We're going to take a break and come back and talk about some of these competitions at universities around the area, okay?
Sounds good.
Jim Dahlke from Chicago. You know, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 12:23. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno is on a phone line, and he's talking to us right before he fires up the grill at his estate in Geneva, Illinois. Jim, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Good to be here.
You know, one of the things I do love about doing this job is to sort of celebrate and get my eyes open to all the possibilities. There are so many more potential ways to create a business or to take an idea and see it to fruition. And one of them are these college venture challenges. And you write to me that this is sort of the season for them, but where undergrads and sometimes graduate students as well present their ideas and then they compete for cash, right? I mean, I explained that correctly, right? What is a venture challenge on campus?
Exactly. So pretty much every university in the Chicago area that's got, you know, entrepreneurship as a track sort of has these like end of year venture competitions where, you know, everybody who's been, all the students who've been working on their projects for the year plus, they're really kind of ready to show off what they've got and earn hopefully a little cash from these venture competitions at the end of the year. So, yeah, exactly like you said. We are in the throes of the venture competition season at the moment. Last week, there were several competitions. Our killer education tech writer, Karis, was at all the universities last week. And, I can give you a kind of quick rundown of what we've seen so far.
Let me ask you one quick question before you do. Yeah. So they're looking at $20,000, $30,000, sometimes $60,000. Where does this cash come from? Do you know?
The cash will come from the university. So sometimes the universities will have a little skin in the game themselves, so they'll be able to invest a little bit in companies that come out of the university, but it's also from sponsorships as well. So it kind of just, it's a mix of different funding sources. So it kind of is, it varies school to school.
All right, tell me about some of the winners this week.
Great. So at Northwestern, we had a startup, IFM, short for Intelligent Flying Machines, probably one of the more interesting companies to win so far at these venture challenges. So at Northwestern, IFM won $30,000 in the first place prize there. And basically what they're doing is autonomous flying robots. These are kind of like drones, but not exactly the ones you think about when you see flying over the park and getting those kind of beautiful aerial videos of the city of Chicago. These are designed specifically for the warehouse. So they're doing inventory tracking inside of warehouses for companies. So you can think about vehicle manufacturers, right? You know, every time something goes wrong in the assembly line for a vehicle company, for Ford, for example, you're losing thousands of dollars per minute for something that stops and you have to tweak it and fix it. And what these robots do basically is fly across the warehouse, looking for issues that are going on the assembly line. They're looking at tracking issues. They're trying to spot problems before humans can. And so they're saving companies money. They're already working with a couple of auto manufacturers to kind of get these flying robots zipping around the warehouse to sort of spot problems before they actually become a really, really big financial problem.
All right, so that's the tech sort of thing you would expect from these venture capital competitions. But we go from there to a frozen banana dessert.
Exactly. And that's what's so great about these venture competitions, because you do get the super, super high tech flying robots. But you also get a startup out of the University of Chicago, B-Nana, which is basically a low calorie dessert. That's sort of like a frozen yogurt kind of dessert, gluten free, extremely simple. It's all the ingredients are basically bananas, honey and lemon. They took home $20,000 in the first place at the UChicago College NVC. College New Venture Challenge, that's for undergrad.
And I love the story behind them, because one of the creators is dealing with celiac disease. The other one's like, hey, when I was a kid, my grandma made a great dessert. They get together, find out it fits each other's needs, and from that, they've got a business.
Exactly. They made the banana is sort of the base of the dessert, so it's super low calorie, it's gluten-free. And that's the thing, right? Like, if you have a gluten allergy, desserts are one of the trickier things to sort of get in your diet. I mean, you want to have something sweet, but oftentimes you can't. So basically, they built a very simple, very low-calorie, gluten-free dessert, and B-Nana is the company there. And yes, exactly like you said, great to see kind of companies that are taking a very different approach to startups kind of also sort of rise to the top. So it's not just the tech whiz robots that are winning. It's also low-calorie desserts.
That's Jim Dahlke. He writes for Chicago Inno. Check it out. Jim, thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it. Have a great holiday.
Thanks, Steve. Happy Memorial Day.
You bet. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, Scott Sonnenschein is worried that you're doing too little with too much. He'd like to see you do more with less. He'd like to see you stretch. So he wrote a book about that. He joins us now. Scott, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, so, you know, reading this and reading about the book, you sound a little bit like my mom. Don't worry about what the other guy has. Worry about what you have and what you can do with it. Is this a mom book?
This is a book for everyone, including mom, because so much of what drives the way that we irrationally use and consume all sorts of resources are what psychologists call social comparisons. We look to our neighbors, we look to our colleagues, and we think that we need these same things in order to be successful. Meanwhile, we take our eye off of our own goals and trying to accomplish what we actually care most about.
How is it that those social comparisons, I mean, it's keeping up with the Joneses or whatever, how much of that gets in the way of our growing when it comes to the workplace or creatively or anyway?
Instead of focusing on goals that we actually care about, we think, well, if we only had the amount of people that my colleague has on their team, or if I had that job title or that office, I could accomplish more. What we end up doing is waiting to pursue things because as we make these comparisons, we fool ourselves to thinking that we need what other people need in order to succeed and achieve our goals. So we end up waiting and delaying. I mean, how many times do we just say to ourselves, if I only had whatever that resource might be,
right.
I can do more.
Once that comes in, I'll be able to do this or that. You're referring here to chasing, right? You make the distinction between chasing and stretching.
Chasing is thinking that you need more resources to do more, and stretching is being resourceful. It's about taking whatever you have, if that's a little or that's a lot, and being more creative and more engaged with it. Stretching is a way of opening up new kinds of possibilities, but realizing that we often underestimate the versatility of the resources right in front of us.
And so you truly are advocating, I mean, doing more with less, obviously, but in a way even denying ourselves some things that you say then will foster greater growth in us in the future.
Right, because we've got our focus in the wrong place. We've got our focus on other people and those social comparisons. But if we think about what it is that we want to accomplish and we take stock of what we already have, we often find much more effective and creative and new uses for what's already around.
Okay, so is this a personal thing or can this be translated to a business thing? And I'm just thinking if employees hear that it can be a business thing, what they're hearing about are cuts, and they probably don't want to hear that.
Yeah, well, so it's not about cutting. It's about doing more with whatever you have, and that could be a really empowering thing for employees because they have goals that they want to accomplish, and they have aspirations that they want to accomplish both for themselves and for their companies, and to empower ourselves to recognize that we don't need to wait for more resources to reach those goals is actually really inspiring. So this is not a strategy for let's just cut to the bone and try and get done more with less. What it really is about is recognizing that we often underestimate what we really can do. And when we get into that mindset, we realize that we can achieve more, whether that be a career aspiration or a project that we're trying to do at work. We just need to rethink how we interact with our resources.
So if a CEO is hearing us talking and thinking, well, he's advocating that I get rid of Smith two cubicles down, that's not necessarily what you're talking about.
Right. I think what I'm advocating is think about how maybe Smith is being underutilized and maybe that we've too quickly written off that employee. We've put him or her into a box and we don't recognize that they can be making more helpful contributions to the organization. So our first instinct is, we need a different type of person, but stretching teaches us, well, let's rethink what we already have to find new ways of using it.
Well, thanks, Scott, because Smith is very happy to hear you say that, I think.
Yes. And the boss will be, too, because it's so helpful to the company.
What is, I come across this term, and I want you to explain it for me. What is threat rigidity, and how does all of that fit here?
Threat rigidity is that when we feel under duress, we actually restrict resources. So if you're a company, and let's say that you're facing a crisis, your psychological reaction is often, this is the time where we need to cut, where we need to restrict resources. But in many situations, that's the time where we need to be creative with the resources that we already have. So threat rigidity undermines organizations' ability to adapt to crises, because that first reaction is, let's just cut everything, because
right.
we're in a downward spiral. But we actually want to be more open and creative during those times, and we end up with better results.
Let's batten down the hatches. Not a good idea.
Right.
It sounds to me like when you're looking at stretching and looking at things in a new way, and not necessarily with resources to use the resources you have. I don't know, Scott. It seems to me in some ways I read this and think you're sort of describing a child's sense of wonder. You know, rather than us being buried or inhibited by what we know and thinking what we need to have. You know, a kid can go out into a backyard and just wonder himself into great creativity.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And kids are naturally resourceful. But what's the first thing we do when we get to a new place of work? We get socialized. We get taught to think in a very specific way. And that takes away some of that wonder and discovery that allows us to come up with new ideas and innovations that help advance a company. So it is about bringing that curiosity and wonder back into the workplace that we strip out of ourselves every time we, whether we go to school or whether we work.
This is a challenging thing, though, for people to hear, I think, because you're telling them that they can do more with what they have, or they can do more with less. And, you know, if you are dealing with threat rigidity, maybe I am, I think that means you're going to take things away from me. How do you counter that concern?
Well, I think part of this is just recognizing that, as intimidating as it might sound, because we have a chasing culture where we judge the worth of ourselves and the worth of our projects based on the amount of resources, is just to start small and experiment. So go to your boss and say, you know, I'd actually want to volunteer, as counterintuitive as this sounds, to deliver this project for a little less money and a little less time. And what happens when people try that is they realize not only can they work through these constraints, they often can work better because of those constraints, because the mind works in different ways when it's facing constraints. The mind is actually a lot more creative and flexible. So ironically, those constraints actually allow us to do more. But we have this visceral reaction that the constraints are bad. It's a threat to us. But if we see this as an opportunity, we usually can rise to the challenge.
All right, so as I'm picturing this, I'm seeing people sort of paralyzed by the depth of their knowledge or the stack of their resources, to where they don't really look at things in a fresh, innovative way. And that brings me to a stat you talk about, research that shows that some of the toughest problems in the world have been solved by people who have the least direct knowledge about the problem, which I guess speaks to fresh eyes. I mean, what's that about?
Yeah, it is about fresh eyes, and it's about that when you accumulate a lot of knowledge in a certain area, you approach that area with a set of blinders. So the research that you're referring to shows that we often put on teams, we want to think, well, we want to put the most expert people on those teams, but it's actually those who actually know the least who often contribute the most to solving complex problems. So if we realize that someone who might have a little less experience or different experience, we don't want to write that person off. We want to actually empower that person to bring his or her ideas into the workplace. But again, that's so counterintuitive to the way that most companies work.
That's one of the ways you advocate stretching, is to put different people on your team, bring people in who might not logically fit here or fit there. Put them there anyway, see what they have to do.
Right. Research shows that we're often, the way most of us pick teams, better off picking names out of a hat than doing what we tend to do.
Is that right?
That is right.
And that's just the idea of then bringing in these fresh eyes or tapping into talents that you might not recognize.
Exactly.
Oh, you know, I love talking to you, because you're describing everything I do wrong. I mean, you know, even to the point of advocating just shaking up your personal life, drive home in a different way, or take a different route to school or whatever, maybe to reinstill this sense of wonder, or just to look at the world from a different direction.
Yeah, it's so important. And even one of my favorites is this idea of taking a break. We tend to think that we're only productive at work, or our bosses might think we're only productive at work. We're actually at the computer doing work. But the research shows that if we take about 20-minute breaks every few hours and do something mindless, we're still working in a very subconscious way, and we free ourselves to make connections we wouldn't otherwise be able to make if we were actually doing quote-unquote real work.
Talking to Scott Sonnenschein, he's the author of the book Stretch. Okay, maybe you've answered this in a way, but I want to wrap it up this way. Let's say you work in an office with a chasing culture. How do you stretch individually, or how do you bring this stretching mentality to the office in general?
Well, change, of course, in organizations is very hard. So you want to start small. You want to try a pilot project and show people that the amount of resources you spend on a project isn't a direct relationship in terms of the results of that project. So if you can start off small, show that project you can deliver for a little less time and a little less money, not only will you make the boss really happy, but you'll start to change this culture of chasing.
All right. You gave me some homework, Scott Sonnenschein. It was great to talk to you today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Mike Allen was on the show a couple weeks ago. He's one of the co-founders of Axios. The other co-founder, Jim Vandehei, on the line now, both of them here. And, well, I wanted to touch base with the two of you about just what's going on in the world these days. Gentlemen, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
It's great to be here.
So, Jim, you know, Mike was in the studio a couple of weeks ago, and I couldn't get his focus because he kept looking out on Michigan Avenue. So I'm hoping now that we're on the phone, things will be a little more productive.
I'll keep him in line.
So tell me what it is about Axios and why it is that you think this will succeed when so many other digital companies have had trouble sort of transferring to news. It would seem to me that, you know, maybe in this era of Trump and news coverage, that this might be the exact right time to launch something like Axios.
We appreciate you saying that, and obviously we share your view of things. Our belief is that people want a news source that they can trust. They want their content done in an efficient way, in a smart way, in a shareable way. And they want to know that it's written by people who have true expertise, whether it's in politics or science or technology. And that's what Axios is. We hired people with that level of expertise. We built a product that you can see at axios.com that's designed just for the user. We want to help you get smarter, faster on the topics that matter most in this world, and be able to share it as quickly and efficiently as possible.
But how about that idea, though, that people, it does seem to me that people are a little bit more engaged since Donald Trump's inauguration, perhaps, than they were a year or two ago?
100%. And it's a great time to be new, because so much of the legacy media has been trying to find its way since November. Whereas we jump in and we say we can illuminate what's going on. And you're right, people have never been more curious. You hear this from your own listeners. I call Trump the new NFL because everybody wants to talk about him and everybody's got an opinion.
Yeah, well, I think that's certainly true. And it's harder and harder to sort of sort through and to find. It's not harder to find reliable information, but it's maybe harder to find comfort with reliable information and to find a home. And that's kind of what I like about you guys, what you present. It's not overwhelming. The digests are easily understood, why it's important. You do sorts of things like that. It's a great way to sort of stop, get a start on the day, and then move on so you can figure out what else is fake news.
I think that's right. I mean, I'm actually pretty sympathetic to your listeners and to the readers who don't know what they can trust or how they can sort through all this blizzard of information and find the news that matters, that's real, and that's consequential. And that's the reason we built this company. We think that people need to be smarter on technology and science, business, and of course, politics is a big part of that. We need to restore their faith in media. I mean, there's a lot of things that we've done collectively in the sort of traditional media space to erode some of that trust. And we've been journalists our whole lives, and we've dedicated ourselves to trying to figure out how can we help people take advantage of what should be information nirvana at a time where people have become distrustful of the media, big institutions. And if we can help solve even a piece of that, that's a great company, it's a great cause.
You know, aside from the website and the digest and all of that every day, I know Mike puts out a newsletter, and you guys have just announced a couple of others. One, Future of Works, the other, Axios Science. And it's interesting to me, the Future of Works, I think, will have a lot to do with robots and AI and things like that. But it's interesting to me that we are in a time where there actually is a marriage between politics and science, that the two sort of do go together in a way that they might not have 10, 15, or 20 years ago.
No, that's right. And all of Axios is founded around the idea of these collisions, these convergences, these topics coming together in a way that creates a space for new innovation. So when you take the Future of Work, and we just went up with the sign up for that newsletter. Great guy Steve Levine, who did a book about batteries and like gets the sort of new world is going to focus on automation, robotics, artificial intelligence, how those come together, and how those are going to animate the worlds of tech, media, business, and politics.
And so that's future work. What's Axios Science going to be about? I mean, I guess it's sort of self-explanatory.
No, it's pretty self-explanatory, but I do want to spend a tiny bit of time on that. So many developments that you and I, your listeners, should be aware of, but we don't have time to plow through 21 different scientific journals. And so what we're doing is we've hired MIT-trained scientists. We're hiring reporters who look at all of the science coverage and then make sure that we're surfacing it for readers, the trends and the development that they should be aware of, because so much of this will affect our lives or affect our business or affect our politics. And I think to Mike's point, it is the convergence of these issues that's going to be the challenge for all of us. I don't think we have the luxury of ignoring how rapid everything is changing around us and before us. And we have to, I think, plug ourselves to what's happening because the change is coming so fast. We have to be able to adapt to it. We have to understand it. And then hopefully we have to, as a country, exploit it and start getting back to doing the things that make this country great.
Well, what I like about what you present, and I'm sure will be the case with science and the robotics and all of that, is that you present these stories, complicated or not, in a pretty accessible way. I mean, I'm not a science guy, but I'm sure I'm going to be able to read this newsletter and understand the science behind it.
Yeah, we ran a survey the other day, a study that showed that people have about the attention of a goldfish. Snapchat says our attention span is 8 seconds. And so it's the opportunity and the challenge for a news organization to capture you in that time. And how can we make you spark quickly? So you go to axios.com, A-X-I-O-S, it means worthy. In Greek, you go on axios.com, and you flip down, and you'll see that every story is roughly the size of an iPhone screen. So you can catch up very quickly, and we tell you at the top what it means, why you should care, what's next, and cut through all the words and all the clutter that we used to help create when we work back in legacy media.
All right, so you've been up a few months, and I would imagine things are going pretty well now. How will you know when you've made it, when you've got something here that's going to last for a while? Do you have a marker, or do you feel that you're there now? You know, how do you know? When will you know?
Well, the response has been so encouraging because as we talk to our readers, including your listeners, they take their Axios personally. They say, I love Axios. I get on. I can trust you. You don't waste my time. And so that early audience has absolutely tapped into what we're going for. And now with the future of work, with the science, with some other things we have up our sleeves, we're going to expand that audience and try and serve even more smart people.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. That's Mike Allen, Jim Vandehei, co-founders of Axios. Hey, guys, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You bet. You're listening.
Axios.com.
Axios.com. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.